Over the Mall is brought to you by Soccer America. Soccer America, the soccer paper of record. Go to socceramerica.com and sign up for your subscription today. More information on all our sponsors at overtheball.com/sponsors.
Hey, this is Bob Lee, and you're listening to Over the Ball with Kevin Flynn, the world's game from an American perspective.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Over the Ball with Kevin Flynn and Dave Gallego. This week on OTB, ESPN reporter Jeff Carlisle. So, Jeff, as you know, is a wealth of information. Written some great articles for ESPN the last couple of weeks. One that really caught my eye was, is Greg Berhalter a good coach? And he kind of goes through the analytics of it. So after this weekend, another dose of zero, the U.S. wins. Three-peat they've got going on there, but was not happy with the Jamaica game. And I don't think anybody was. And certainly Mexico, it was a different story. But even that game seemed a little disjointed to me. Players out of position. So it'll be nice to talk to Jeff and get caught up on that. Also, the referee strike is over. He can fill us in on that. I want to talk to him about the U.S. Open Cup, the sale of the San Diego Wave. So he's a wealth of knowledge. I love a lot of the articles he's written for ESPN. So we'll get caught up with him in just a bit.
You know, and it's interesting because he started off in the tech industry and then he left and became a journalist. So I'm interested as to his trajectory as to how he got there. But yeah, really looking forward to all the things we can talk about because, like you say, I was ready. I was prepared to blast the U.S. against Jamaica effort. And then they came back with such a beautiful performance that I can't possibly beat them up. I mean, I can, and I will a little bit, but I have to give it up for them. I mean, champions, 2-0.
Yeah, it's interesting. These are not the Mexico teams of the past that we have seen. Though maybe, you know, the U.S. is that much better.
I think the U.S. is that much better. Come on, Kev. I got to give it up for him. I think this is the best U.S. team we've ever had.
Well, I think talent-wise, we have for sure. I thought a lot, even in the Mexico game, they had so much possession, which was always usually the other way around when we played Mexico.
Yeah, exactly.
We have some studs out there. I am not sure, and this is why I want to talk to Jeff Carlisle about it. You know, I'm not sure Berhalter's got them working the right way together. I don't doubt any of those players singularly, but the places like Gio Reyna was getting caught way in the back, to pick up the ball to try and make it. I didn't quite understand.
You're right. The only time he came up, he scored.
Right. He was so deep, and I don't get it. And especially with Tyler Adams there, so. I don't know. They didn't play Musa very much in Mexico. I thought he waited too long to make substitutions. The guys were knackered, and Musa should have come in, a guy who can really possess the ball at midfield and take some of the workload off of other people's legs. And he didn't. He waited too long. So I thought they looked a little disjointed, even in the Mexico win.
Well, that's a good point. I think that in terms of the possession percentages, we did have the advantage against Jamaica and against Mexico, but Jamaica was such a disappointing match. And please, for those who see the score 3-1 and think, oh wow, we beat the crap out of them, no, we did not beat the crap out of them. We could very easily have lost. The guys were sleepwalking. There were a bunch of zombies out there. Very discouraging performance. But again, fast forward to Mexico and quality goals. It was a quality game, and I was incredibly happy. And congrats to the guys.
It's like Mike Tyson says, you know, you have this great preparation. When they score a goal in 30 minutes, it's like everybody has a game plan until you get punched in the face, and that's exactly what happened. All right, so let's take a break here, and when we come back, we'll come on with ESPN reporter Jeff Carlisle. You're listening to Over the Ball. All right, we're back on OTB. Joining us now, he's a reporter for ESPN. You can also get him on Twitter, Jeffrey Carlisle at Twitter. If you do not follow his Twitter account, do so. You always get up-to-date articles and all kinds of comments and insights on the national team, MLS, all kinds of things. Welcome to the show once again, Jeff Carlisle. How are you, Jeff?
Hey, Jeff.
Doing well, guys. How are you?
Good, Jeff. Excellent. So much to talk to you about. First, you know, I want to get your feelings on overall. You know, you got to – like they say it's with stand-up comedy, you got to throw out the high, throw out the low, and just kind of even out your life. Don't take it all, you know, don't believe the highs, don't believe the lows. So we had a real low with Jamaica. We had a real high with Mexico. What were your overall feelings about the tournament itself?
Yeah, I mean, I think the performances were bit all over the place. I mean, even if you go back to the quarterfinal round against Trinidad and Tobago, I mean, you know, there was the win at home, you know, the goals took a while to come, but they finally did come. And then there was kind of that, you know, that debacle, in Trinidad. And then obviously a really subpar, you know, disappointing performance against Jamaica. I mean, the last thing you want to do against a team that's going to bunker in is give up a goal 30 seconds in. And that played right into their hands. And I thought the U.S. got extremely lucky to be able to get a win out of that. And then the game against Mexico, I mean, and I kind of mentioned this in my column the other night. I mean, it seems like whenever the U.S. is in a position these days that where it needs to kind of right itself off of a poor performance, I mean, there's Mexico, you know, ready to kind of play the role of the tonic that the U.S. absolutely needs. And I think that was the case this time around. You know, the first half
Jamaica. I'm sorry. And by the way, Jamaica was just to backtrack. Jamaica was missing their two best players to make things worse. Anyway, go on.
Yeah. I had four, actually, if you consider, like, I think Nicholson was suspended. And then there was another guy that was suspended too. His name escapes me. But yeah, it was not a full strength Jamaica team by any means. Nope. You know, Mexico, I thought the first half was kind of cagey. You know, the U.S. was kind of content to pass the ball backwards and sideways, but I think, you know, they really wanted to try to take the sting out of Mexico, you know, and kind of give them a taste of their own medicine. Usually it's Mexico that's got the ball in these games. Right. So and then to get the goal from Adams when they did, I mean, that's massive. You know, it just gives them a ton of momentum.
A goal. Yeah.
Yeah, just an absolute amazing goal. Banger. And you know, Tyler Adams was getting some good-natured ribbing in the mix zone afterwards. You know, like, you know, I think Chris Richards said, yeah, I was about to just turn around and not even watch it when he hit it. But, you know, obviously he struck it as well as he could, and it was plenty to beat Memo Ochoa in the Mexico goal. And then, you know, to get the second one in the second half from Gio Reyna, again, I think perfectly timed. You know, I think it got a little ragged for the U.S. after that. I think, I mean, some tired legs beginning to show themselves, but overall it was a good win, a solid win, a really good win for the U.S. And it takes the pressure off them a little bit, I think, now heading into Copa America.
Yeah, you definitely have concerns, you know, for sure. I thought even in the Mexico game, you know, Gio so far deep receiving the ball.
That was by design, though.
It just seemed a little disjointed. And then my other criticism of coaching-wise, and this speaks to your article about is Berhalter a good coach? And I've always, you know, backed him. But those were really tired legs out there, and he waited too long to make any substitutions, where especially like a Musa who can come in, you know, maintain possession in the middle of the park and sort of give guys a chance to get a breather. And I just didn't understand the logic there.
Well, I mean, I think with Gio, Berhalter – he didn't talk a lot about it post game, but that was by design. I think they wanted Gio building the attack. They wanted him taking the ball off the center backs and really trying to play through midfield. You know, I think Mexico's shape in that first 45 minutes for the most part was pretty good. I mean, there weren't a whole lot of spaces out there, but I think, you know, that was the idea, was to get Gio on the ball and kind of let him initiate and then push forward into more dangerous spots. And so,
well, it seems like the only time he did push forward, he actually scored. The United States capitalized on that.
Yeah, well, but they also got the ball wide. I mean, in the run-up to that goal, they're able to get to the end line, kind of create some havoc, which is, I think, what Berhalter has been preaching a lot of late. And what he said he wanted to see more of that against Jamaica was get the ball out wide and really find that space in behind, and then, you know, try to, you know, draw defenders in and then hit the late trailer. So, So I think, yeah, I mean, I was okay with Gio dropping that deep. Just as long as he doesn't stay there. I mean, obviously it's not like you want him to be a holding midfielder and,
lose the ball there, Jeff, or lose
right,
the ball.
The ball
there,
right.
Yeah.
He's got that
yeah.
great creative mind, but he's also got sort of almost a lackadaisical kind of way on the ball where he's not playing the ball like a defender. That's for sure. You know,
yeah, I will say, I mean, you know, I have, so, you know, Gio was actually the player of the game in both games because he was the only bright spot against Jamaica. So, you know, we've beaten him up a little bit over the past few months, and I'm really proud of the performance, and I'm proud to say that he did a great job. And listen, I pat him on the back. Jeff, I want to ask you something. I don't know. Did you guys get a chance to see the U23, the Olympic team playing? They played France and they played Guinea. Did either of you guys get to see that? And the reason I'm bringing it up is because, you know, Jeff, when I was younger, you know, we had John Harkes on, we had Bruce Murray on, and back in, you know, once upon a time as a kid, not even a kid, I was probably 20 years old, you see Bruce Murray taking a free kick against Italy. It was the only in the World Cup, and it was the only opportunity we had in that game. But you're excited because there was some life that the team showed. Now you fast forward to now, and you watch the United States national team, and I'm watching the U23 team, and I'm looking at them playing really well. Do you think that this is the best team that the United States has ever had? And what do you think about the future of the guys coming up now? The pipeline.
I mean, it's a tricky one because, I mean, it's all relative to, you know, the teams that you're playing against and the quality of the opposition. And I also think it's...
Well, they played France.
Yeah. No, I get that. I'm thinking more like, you know, guys of the Harkes and Bruce Murray here. Right. I mean, they were dealing with so much extraneous stuff, I think, you know, away from the game itself, you know, trying to get notoriety for the sport, trying to establish a foothold in Europe, you know, for other guys to follow. And, you know, a lot of guys came back to get MLS started. So I just think there was so much more that they had to think about. And I think about a guy like Todd Ramos. I mean, that guy was a fantastic player. And so
man among boys, yeah, boys. The man among boys.
So I just think a lot of what's happening now is just due to increased opportunity, which a lot of those guys paved the way for. So I think talent-wise, yeah, I think this is probably the most talented team that the U.S. has had, especially when you look at the clubs that they're playing for. But, I mean, the rest of the world hasn't stood still either. So, no. I mean, it's not like they're going to just stand in place and watch the U.S. go past them. So, yeah, I think it's probably the most talented team, but I still think it's a team that's got a lot to prove. And I think that's why I'm really looking forward to Copa America is, you know, to see this team against some higher level opposition in a competitive setting. I mean, friendlies help, but only so much. And so I'm curious to see, like, when there's something on the line, how these guys do. There's a sense, just, you know, my personal feeling that they're not quite there yet. I mean, I saw the game against Germany last fall, and Germany was the better team that day. I mean, it wasn't really close. You know, granted, the U.S. took the lead, I mean, they're struggling too. So it's, you know, so I look at the U.S. team, and I still feel like they haven't hit their ceiling yet, which is a good thing. I mean, you don't want them to hit their ceiling now, and so I think, you know, it's going to be fascinating this summer to see what transpires.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating. I'm sorry, Kev, just one more thing. I think the Olympics are going to be fascinating, too. They've got a guy, Jack McGlynn, on the U23 team. He's a name that will come up in future conversations. He's the real deal. And watching that level of play, it was a thing of beauty. I was so happy to see them playing like that.
Yeah, I did not get a chance to watch that game, unfortunately. You're trying to...
Too much... To watch,
yeah, Jeff. Just a lot going on the ground in Dallas. So, but I think Cade Cowell scored in that game too. I mean, I did see that goal online, and I think again, I go back to opportunity.
Yes.
I mean, he's got an opportunity.
Exactly.
Cade Cowell goes to Mexico for an important club, and Brandon Vasquez is doing the same. And I mean, these are guys who are not even really in the 23 at the moment. I mean, I think you'll see these guys with the Olympic team, you know, not so much in Vasquez's case, but for Cade Cowell, you'll see him with the Olympic team and, you know, instead of the full team. And that's not a bad thing. I mean, I think, you know, it's been a while since the U.S. men were in the Olympics, and people like to deride it, you know, especially in Europe, because it's an under 23 tournament and all that, but it's still international experience in a tournament setting. And so I think all of those experiences, I think they add up after a while. And so that's why I think, it's going to be a great summer of soccer with Copa America and with the Olympics as well. I think you're right to point that out.
Right. I just want to go back to this point. I think what the U.S. has now, Jeff, and sort of what you're inferring is there's so much more depth now. I think that the U.S. national team always had great standout players, Johnny O'Brien, certain people, kind of their careers came to fruition at a certain time. And we always had an individual that or two that could really play at the next level. This group of guys, I think athletically, skill-wise, really, and there's a lot of them. There's a lot of guys. I'm kind of like, wow, Musa wasn't in the lineup. Aronson wasn't in the lineup. You mentioned Vasquez. I mean, this is our cup runneth over in a way, as if we're looking historically back on some of these older teams. So I think just the amount of players that we have available to us is the great thing. So, but I think they have a lot to prove. Like you said, I think this team has a ton to prove because people have doubted them, like put themselves in a hole like that. Not just once, but a couple of times. Mm-hmm. So, no question.
Yeah, I mean, it used to be that if somebody got hurt, it was like this catastrophe. I mean, what are they going to do? I mean, it was, the player pool just didn't run as deep. So yeah, I mean, I agree that there's just a lot more options now. And a Yunus Musa, I mean, he didn't get a whole lot of playing time in this go around. So, I mean, it's, I mean, obviously he played against Jamaica, but I mean, it was, Berhalter didn't have to worry about moving away from that and thinking, okay, I'm stuck playing this guy, even though he might not be best suited to play against a Mexican.
He had options.
So it's, I wouldn't go so far as to say it's an embarrassment of riches, but certainly there's a lot more comfort in knowing that if his form drops, if he gets injured, there are other options and, playing stylistic options. If Berhalter thinks that a guy's not right for a particular game.
Well, look at Haji Wright. I mean, Haji Wright, is on a plane going to Qatar for vacation, and then he comes and scores two goals. So he moves up the depth chart. And this is what classically national teams have been about. You got to be playing well at the right time, because there's lots of players who could play at that level, but you got to be peaking. So good for him.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yep. Yeah, Jeff, I wanted to change gears a little bit and talk about the state of the attendance levels that we see for these games and the locations that they choose. I think that the amount of empty seats that you saw for the Jamaica game was inexcusable. Now, I know the tickets apparently were about $200 a pop, which is also on the very high side, but there was really nobody there. I know there was other things going on. You had the beginning of March Madness, but the attendance was it was like an old NASL game. And then you had the Mexico game, which obviously you knew was going to be pro-Mexico. But what are your thoughts on that? A good strategy? And also, enough of playing on turf. Would you agree?
Yeah, I mean, that's never optimal. I mean, I think it is important to remember that, this is a CONCACAF event. This isn't a U.S. soccer event. So it's not U.S. soccer that's setting the ticket prices. They're not picking the venues. They're not engaged in promotion. I mean, talking to some people in Dallas, they said there was next to no advertising about the game. Now, obviously, that didn't stop Mexico from filling the arena. But at the same time, this is still soccer in the United States and you still need to work at this. And so, I mean, I do think there are some extenuating circumstances, but I think it's a fair point to say that, this team hasn't quite grabbed the imagination, the way that maybe some teams did in the past. I mean, granted it was, soccer was growing and, there was this upward trajectory that was seemingly endless. And then, 2018 happens and, I think that even though the team qualified for 2022, I still look back at 2018 and not qualifying for the World Cup then. I still think that did a lot of damage, and I still think that's being felt a little bit. So, I think But man, I mean, you have to earn it with performances too. And there hasn't really been like this performance that's going to make you stand up and notice. I mean, and hopefully that's what Copa America can do for the U.S. this summer, is kind of give this group an opportunity to play a game like that. You know, everyone's talking about how they're not scheduling competitive friendlies. I mean, there are so many moving parts to that, namely just how crowded the international calendar is. I mean, UEFA, right, their international windows are filled up between now and like November of 25. And, right, you know, in South America, it's, you know, pretty much the same. I think there's going to be a few more windows. There are little pockets in Asia and Africa, but, you know, it's not easy. I mean, I think the USSF has done well to get these two friendlies coming up against Colombia and Brazil. I mean, you know, that's another opportunity for the US to kind of gauge themselves and figure out, you know, okay, this is what it's like to go up against these top teams. Here's where we're falling short. So, but yeah, it's a lot of moving parts. I don't think it's all the US Soccer Federation's fault, but I mean, it's something that they need to figure out, because, you know, this is, you know, there's a lot of money is going to get paid to these two national teams, both the men and the women, you know, courtesy of these CBAs. And so, you know, it's important for the US to try to maximize the revenue any way they can. And that means doing better in terms of attendance, I think, especially on the men's side. I think it's,
yeah,
it's,
I mean, the American criticism. Outlaws, they can, yeah, they can only do so much.
Right.
I don't even think Sam's Army is an entity anymore, but it was very discouraging to see so many Mexican fans there. We knew that was going to happen. And again, to see empty stands for the Jamaica game. I mean, look, whether or not you put any credence into the world rankings, we are number 13 right now. Mexico's 15. We're actually ahead of Germany. Again, I don't know whether or not you put any credence into that, but we have a top 15 team in the world, and you have empty stadiums. I mean, come on.
Yeah. Well, he's Dr. Negative there today, Jeff, but I was happy we won. Let me ask you this though, Jeff, because as much as my co-host Dave is bitching and moaning, how about Mexico? What has happened to Mexico? What's going on there?
Well, I think it's kind of a two-headed monster. First of all, you've got a situation where not as many Mexico players head to Europe at an early age. And I think the second part of that is that when you look at Liga MX, you know, a lot of the best players there are foreign born and they come from abroad. Yeah. Now you could say the same thing about MLS, but I think MLS and US academies in general have been much more willing to transfer players overseas at a younger age rather than trying to hang on to these guys. I mean, a guy like Edson Alvarez, you know, I think he's the exception rather than the rule. And, you know, don't get me wrong. I mean, I think he's a fantastic player, but, you know, Mexico just doesn't have enough of them right now. And so, and I think that it hasn't happened all at once, but I think it's been a steady erosion of getting exposed to, you know, top level leagues and
world football. Yeah.
You know, it's, you know, you could get into the 20s easily in terms of guys who are playing abroad or at least have experience playing abroad. And so, I don't think you can say the same for Mexico. And so, again, I think they've really got to look at their youth development. And I think it's the onus is on the owners of Mexican club teams to figure out, okay, am I going to think only of my club or am I going to think about, you know, helping our players develop and sending them abroad at the right time. So, I mean, I think those are two huge factors.
Yeah, I'm looking at their last five outcomes. They tied Uzbekistan 3-3. Ghana, they beat 2-0. Germany, they tied 2-2. Honduras, they lost to 2-0. So they lost to Colombia 3-2. And then, of course, 2-0 to the United States. So, yeah, maybe they have slipped, to Kevin's point.
No, definitely.
I was earlier saying that it's just that the United States elevated their game, though.
And I think it's both, but I think, you know, one thing that Tim Reeves said afterwards that was really interesting, I made the comment that, you know, Mexico looked kind of predictable tonight. And he said, well, that's because they are predictable. It's the most direct Mexico team that there's ever been. And nothing they did surprised the U.S., you know, and nothing that, you know, they were ready for everything. I mean, this was a prepared U.S. team that faced Mexico. And so, you know, I think when you add all that up, it's just there are just not that many standouts. I mean, Santi Jimenez is certainly a compelling player. And it was a huge topic of discussion about why he didn't start. But again, that's one guy. And so, right. You know, there need to be more Santi Jimenez's, you know, playing abroad and having success. And then I think you'll see, I mean, these things are always cyclical. I think once that happens for Mexico, you could see the scale start to even out a little bit more.
Right. They got to win once in a while to keep the excitement going, though. That's for sure. So let's shift gears here a little bit. Talk about the refereeing situation and in MLS. Is it pretty much done and dusted?
Yeah. I mean, the PSRA, which is the referee that represents the union that represents the referees, they voted last night or yesterday. So it was a 77.4% approval of the CBA that was offered. That's on the one hand, I mean, depends on how you look at it. On the one hand, that's a, you know, solid majority, but it doesn't show complete unification either. And so, you know, they got some bumps in pay. But I think the reason that there was some dissension there is it's a 7-year CBA. Usually these things run for 5 years, and you know, it's a tactic that MLS has used with the players, and granted MLS funds pro. So those two organizations are joined at the hip. And then the negotiators pulled the same thing this time. So it was, a 7-year deal, and that might seem like it gives you more security, but every time a new CBA kicks in, there's a significant bump in pay. This time it was 28%. And so now that's being delayed by 2 years. So that's money that's not in the referee's pocket. You know, I think in terms of the travel stuff, it was really very modest gains. But I think the good news for fans is that, you know, it is done. The PSRA referees will be back on the field this weekend. And they can go good. Back. The fans can go back to complaining about the referees who are the best in the region rather than the replacements. So,
why anybody would want a referee, I have no idea. Even the amount of things I would yell at the referee during my days. So, tell us. I think you explained the U.S. Open Cup situation better than anyone. Can you just give us a brief synopsis of that and where things lie now?
Well, I mean, what you've got is a situation where MLS does not really want to invest in the Open Cup to the same degree that they had been. There's going to be 8 MLS first teams that enter the competition. And then the rest of the teams are sending their reserve teams, their second teams. And so, you know, basically this is about money and control, and the MLS does not control the Open Cup. That's a U.S. Soccer Federation property. And so, you know, it's always interesting to hear MLS complain about fixture congestion when, with the advent of the Leagues Cup, which they and Liga MX invented, I mean, that's done a lot to kind of clog up, you know, the list of available dates. And so, on the one hand, you can kind of understand it, but I personally do think the onus is on MLS to try to raise the level of the entire sport. And that's not really being done here, especially when you consider the history that the U.S. Open Cup has. I mean, this is a competition that started in 1913, you know, first final was in 1914. And, you know, except for war and a pandemic, it's been held every year since. So, you know, it's disappointing to see MLS take this route. You know, you keep hearing from soccer executives with MLS clubs, and they're like, oh, we love the Open Cup. We want to do it. I think, you know, there was a meeting back in December where the CSO said, you know, the chief soccer officer said, hey, if we're going to play the Open Cup, at least expand the rosters so that we can, you know, use some of our reserve team guys. Right. But for whatever reason, the powers that be in MLS, you know, decided that they wanted to put their foot down and say that we don't have to do this. I mean, you know, depending on who you talk to, the stuff going on with the Super League over in Europe, that had an impact and made U.S. soccer's position a little less stable. They couldn't quite put their foot down the way they wanted. I mean, but it's a shame to see this happen, because again, there's always some great memories, some great drama in the Open Cup. You see lower division teams, you know, punching above their weight, like it is in any other cup competition in the world.
Yeah, March Madness first round.
Yeah,
David versus Goliath.
Yeah, so it's disappointing to me to see MLS take that route now.
Yeah, me too.
The format that was agreed upon was only for this year, so the two sides could get together. You know, MLS and the U.S. Soccer and the USL, which is a big stakeholder in this, also. You could see them get together and come up with another format next year. But to me, once MLS gets one foot out the door, it seems more likely that the other foot is going to follow. And so, you know, I think there's a lot of concern about the future of the Open Cup and the prestige around it. One little wrinkle is that right now, the winner of the Open Cup gets a spot in the CONCACAF Champions Cup. And I've been reliably informed that if it becomes a competition only with second tier sides and below, that spot is going to go away. And so, because CONCACAF would have a heck of a time trying to convince the rest of the region that, yeah, we've got a competition completely for second tier sides and below, but they're going to get in the Champions Cup. And that just wouldn't go over well in Mexico and Costa Rica, anywhere else. So
yeah, I miss the U.S. I miss the idea of it, because I love the whole David versus Goliath scenario, and I think that March Madness, the first round specifically, is the one of the more exciting, if not the most exciting thing outside of the World Cup. We don't have all that much time, and we hope that you can come back, because as we alluded to earlier, we have a million questions for you. Okay. But I wanted to ask you your opinion on something. I was with a client, a non-soccer fan, about 15 years ago, and I'm bringing this up for a reason. I'm going someplace with this, and he said that we should go to a soccer game together one day. And I'm in sales, so I meet with clients all the time. This guy is the furthest thing from a soccer fan, but he brought that up. So I said, yeah, okay, where did that come from? He's like, I play FIFA, and I love it, I guess, on Xbox or whatever. So that left an impression that I didn't really think too much of it at the time, meaning I didn't think it went beyond him. Maybe he was just an anomaly. Then I find out that everybody's doing it. If you could pinpoint a few reasons why soccer has gained so much popularity. Now, Kevin and I are used to the days of the NASL, where other than the Cosmos and the Sounders, you know, you get some teams getting 5,000 people at a game. But now they're selling out
these soccer. Chicago. We had Willie Roy on. We got to give Willie Roy his due. Sure, yeah. The Sting.
Willie Roy in the house.
I grew
house.
Up in Fort Lauderdale, so I grew up watching the Strikers. That's where I caught the soccer bug. So,
well, there you go. Okay. Oh, yeah, and that's another thing. We're both Miami Dolphin fans, so that's a story for another day also. I wanted to talk to you about the fish. But getting back to the question, so why has soccer gotten so much more popular? And again, I bring up the FIFA example, because he got into soccer because of a video game.
Yeah, I mean, I think it helps that there are a lot more avenues into the sport. That there's a lot more paths that you can take to becoming a fan. You know, I mean, for me, you know, I grew up in Fort Lauderdale, and I mean, the Strikers were our team. And so that was kind of that's kind of how I got hooked. But now it's not just about having a local team, whether it's an MLS team or a USL team, or even in divisions lower than that. I mean, you've got the FIFA video game. I think that did do a lot to kind of create this additional avenue of fandom. And then, you know, I think the World Cup itself, I think that has always been a huge driver of creating new fans, of getting people to sample the game. You know, they get jazzed by watching the national team play, be it the men or the women. And so they say, yeah, I want to experience some more of that. And so certainly when I was growing up, I mean, the U.S. men were in a 40-year dead zone of not qualifying for World Cups between 1950 and 1990. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we didn't even have, we didn't even have that to aspire to. So, I mean, I just think that there are more avenues to the sport. I think FIFA is a big one. I mean, I wrote a piece a few months back about NWSL players playing FIFA and some of the hilarious reactions they get online where, you know, not only did I you know, a woman gamer just score on you, but I'm actually that player. I mean, I had that come up. So, yeah, you know, it's, but I think it's, and there's always the youth soccer angle as well. You know, kids play it, their parents start to get into it. You know, they start to get into the sport and start to pick it up. And then these days you can watch almost any game anywhere. I mean, whether it's Bundesliga, Premier League, especially, I think has done a lot. I mean, you know, you've got people all over the United States wearing, you know, Man City or Arsenal or Liverpool or what have you. And so that's another draw that I think has brought people into the game. So I just, again, I think there are these multiple avenues that draw people in. And then, you know, it's the game itself will ultimately determine whether they stay fans or whether they say, oh, no, I'd rather do something else. But it's just so much easier to consume. I think that's the bottom line.
Yeah, Jeff, I would just say life by 1,000 paper cuts. It seems like it's a million things that are happening at one time to bring the game, to elevate it over and over. And guys like us, the dinosaurs, spent a summer playing for Keith Weller in Fort Lauderdale, by the way. One of my most favorite summers of my life.
Yep.
Fantastic town. But I think, you know, you mentioned a couple of events, and it's almost like they're clothespins that hold people's attention. And I think what you're talking about, the loss of that World Cup is still being felt. And I think that's being felt on the pitch with the U.S. men's national team. And to look at like Caitlin Clark, just this season, last season, what she's done for women's basketball. I mean, it's people are interested now. People who normally were not interested in women's basketball are watching this because you have a great story there. So I think, for us, the great story's got to come this summer. It's got to build. You know, the women have sort of lost a little bit of their shine of late.
They've done a ton to help advance the sport in this country. I mean, that can't be overlooked.
100%. I mean, and the new coach is the real deal.
And, you know, 99 and then, you know, 15 and 19. And, you know, it's it's just that's been a huge factor as well. I mean, so it's not just young boys that are playing the sport, but it's young girls too. And so that's done a ton
Young girls
to raise the level.
The world.
Right.
I would say that young girls around the world have been motivated by the U.S. women's national team. So, you know, think globally, act locally. So it's all working. Jeff, we could talk to you all day, man. This has been great getting caught up a little bit. Constantly read your articles. He's a reporter for ESPN. You can always check his articles out there. Also Jeffrey Carlisle at Twitter. Follow his stuff. He's always got some real great insights. Jeff Carlisle, thanks again for joining us on Over the Ball, my friend. We'll talk to you again soon.
All right. Anytime, guys.
All right. And we're back. Dave, I enjoyed that. You know, I've had Jeff on a bunch when I was at ESPN and when I was at Sirius XMFC as well. So he's always had a wealth of knowledge. So it was good to get caught up in that. And it's sad news about the U.S. Open Cup. I did play in the finals with the Hartford Portuguese many years ago. It was like one of the highlights of my career. I mean, it was sort of the highest level you could get before there was the MLS around.
That's
such a great feel to, you know, anybody can win it. Anybody can get in it. Our FA Cup, you know? So
I think, didn't Rochester win the whole thing? Like,
yeah, the Rhinos, 10 years ago. Covered that game, actually, you know, years back, probably late 90s, I think, probably maybe 98, 99, the Rochester Rhinos won that there. So
that's a shame.
Some good stuff. And then, you know, we all seem to be on the same page with the U.S. men's national team, you know, got to put themselves in a hole against Jamaica and then kind of looked good against Mexico. But, you know, my fear is just not quite good enough. I'm worried, you know, like Jeff was saying, they didn't look very good against Germany. Germany was the better team, and Germany's struggling right now. So I don't know where we match up. We always gauged ourselves with how we matched up against Mexico, and now it seems like there's a big world up there.
You got to move up, yeah. There's bigger fish to fry at this point, and I think Berhalter has even stated that in press conferences. There are bigger fish to fry. I mean, look, at the last World Cup, we looked like crap against the Netherlands. So you see that we still have a lot of improving to do. I think they'll get there. I do. I really, really do. And I'm when you look at the time of possession, we won that against Jamaica substantially and against Mexico. And that is a telling story to me.
Yeah. So I want to follow up with, if you're interested in what we were talking about here, Jeff's got a great article on is Berhalter a good coach? And they sort of go through the analytics and the wins, losses, and how they've done. And one thing that Jeff wrote in there was the Klinsmann nightmare, because I know some people, it's almost like people forget that he dug us such a hole, Klinsmann, with this, and no one wanted to say anything because he was Jürgen Klinsmann.
Right.
He's a great player. So I think,
by the way, Klinsmann, who got blown out as the coach of South Korea also.
Yeah. Right. And so
that didn't last long.
One of the things is many national team coaches do not last two cycles. And, Berhalter has made it through a second cycle here, or is about to. So we are putting our faith behind him. And there's this good group of players. I just hope it all kind of comes together sooner rather than later.
Well, the world of soccer, you're only as good as your last game.
Did you just make that up, Dave? Did you just make that up right now? You're amazing.
You're constantly reapplying for your job.
It's funny. My father used to say all those little things to me when I was growing up. Be part of the solution, not part of
not
the problem. Give more than you get. And the strange part is, I actually thought he made them up. It wasn't until I got to like fourth grade, one of my friends is like, that was Winston Churchill who said that, Kevin. I'm like, oh.
Kevin, and you were like, wait, my dad is Winston Churchill?
My dad knows Winston Churchill. I went in. So, all right. Well, great stuff, Dave. I played this past weekend, probably for the first time in 10 years. So, at Beverly Hills High School, it's amazing. Just
you live to tell, huh?
I did, man. I was hurting. I took a corner kick, and there my right nut was clearly left the building with Elvis. So,
played in Beverly Hills.
Yeah, they have a turf field over there, and there's about maybe 20 guys that play. So it was kind of fun. And there's always one guy, he's got some good foot skill, but he's overweight and he's yelling at everybody. And I'm like, dude, who are you yelling at, man? You gotta play the ball to your feet or else you can't get it. So, and it was ridiculous. So
if you get a chance, check out the U23 game against France. I think you'll be impressed, even if you just watch the highlights.
No, yeah, I've got it recorded. So I'm going to watch it. There's too much going on right now.
And I definitely want to have Jeff back maybe in a couple of months, because there were so many questions that I have for him, and I know you feel the same way. And then next week we have the CEO for the United States Youth Soccer League, Skip Gilbert, your buddy. Yeah. Skip. So I'm looking forward to chatting with him. Want to
Skip,
talk to him?
Yeah, he was an All-American. He was an All-American goalkeeper at the University of Vermont, and we scored on a corner kick in overtime, kind of almost like the Jamaica goal that the U.S. scored the other night, ruined their homecoming. I always try to remind Skip of that little story, but he was a hell of a keeper. And he's trying to make some really great changes with his new position there. So, all right. So next week, Skip Gilbert. So check us out here on Over the Ball. I'd like to thank our guest this week, Jeff Carlisle. Again, you can go to Jeffrey Carlisle at Twitter. He writes some great articles for ESPN. All right, everyone. That's all the time we have. For Dave Gallego, I'm Kevin Flynn, and we'll see you next time on OTB.
Have comments or questions? Give us a call or shoot us a text at 727-914-9998. 727-914-9998.